This week on Myopia Movies, we revisit Cannontown as I desperately wait to make sure my printer doesn't make noise again. Okay. We have entered He-Man, Masters of the Universe, as a way to lighten our load and have a little bit of fun this week. If you don't know, this is a canon picture, which already makes it okay with me. It's one of the first film performances of Courtney Cox as an actress and stars Dolph Lundgren and Frank Langella. So it's, you know, a good scene-chomping time. You will enjoy this. They also couldn't make an orca work, so they invented a new character who is just disgusting. Also, if you're interested, we riff this on Cineprov, so join the Cineprov page and DM me if you would like to buy a copy of our riff. In the meantime, thanks for all you do, and bye! Welcome to Myopia Movies. This week we are talking Masters of the Universe, the He-Man movie that time forgot. We are kind of easing in to some more canon movies because, God, don't you just love it. I'm Nick Hoffman, host of Myopia Movies and host of Required Reading, and hopefully by the time you hear this, the return, the back live Cineprov. And on panel we have
Candace, also from Cineprov, regular picture show at the Plaza Theater, trivia every Monday night at Felix's on Piedmont, and general good times.
Hello, this is Daniel, a contributor to PopDose.com, and I have the power!
And I'm Charlie Rose. That's it, just Charlie.
Charlie exists only to appear on podcasts and teach Noor about gay theory and film. Queer film theory. So we're doing the canon flick, Masters of the Universe, which if you don't know canon, you haven't been listening to our podcast for long.
Oh, rest in peace, sweet canon films. I miss you.
Menachem Golem and Globus. Globus and Golem. Right.
Globus.
Somehow Golem got Globus the rights to this, because when your rights were about to be worthless, you went to them.
Well, this helped kill the company, because they usually make a movie for $1 million, and then at least it made like $3 million, which didn't matter. But this was like a $20 million movie for them.
But wait, didn't they also do like Superman
3 and 4?
3 and 4.
No,
so
just 4. But
just
it was around
four,
the same
time.
Yeah,
piece.
I was gonna say. I think there's an argument for what killed them.
Same year.
Cocaine.
Like cocaine. Lots
this didn't
of cocaine.
Have a craft services table. That was buckets of chicken they went out and bought. The cocaine
from that
there.
Same restaurant that's in the actual movie. What are these little plastic pieces?
So the movie stars English hobbyist Dolph Lundgren. He doesn't quite have the grasp on anything.
You know, the irony is he's smarter than all of us put together.
And the average bear.
Mm-hmm. That's some Swedish learning right there.
He's a doctorate in theoretical physics, I think.
Yes.
Dr. Lundgren, you know, the punchy guy. He's also in Rocky IV.
Rocky IV, right?
No.
Yeah.
Was 4.
He
dies.
And Creed 2, I think. We have, what's his name? Robert Loggia? No, not
Robert Langella.
Frank Langella.
Frank Langella.
Who is, eating all the scenery. And of course, is this her first role other than that Bruce Springsteen video?
For Courtney Cox,
Courtney Cox, yeah, Courtney Cox.
Wait, she was in this?
Courtney.
You're messing with us.
Oh, right. She was the
Julie.
Female lead.
Julie,
yeah.
Winston.
I literally will fight you.
And we also, of course, have Billy Barty in this, which, you know, he's wearing a scrotum for the entirety of this movie. He has a character named Gwildor, who is, I guess, the action figure every kid wanted.
Yeah, Courtney Cox was in Family Ties, actually, from 82 to 89.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Doing what? Huh. I guess being in the family.
I don't know.
As part of the ties.
She was probably a fucking cousin nobody loved, so.
Can you imagine?
I seriously did not put two and two together and realize that was Courtney Cox.
You
didn't recognize her from the Love Boat?
Oh, bless your heart.
Yeah, no, I mean,
I have seen all of 2 episodes of Friends in my life, and they both were terrible.
Spoiler alert, they're all terrible.
She's also in like a really stupid comedy I kind of like, which is If It's Tuesday, This Must Be Belgium, which is just a bunch of...
And, of course, Scream, but...
And, yes, and in Scream, where she's actually very good.
But anyway, so anyone want to try to give a plot synopsis of this movie? I defy anyone to give me a plot synopsis of this movie.
Come on, you know you want to do it.
The movie is about me taking over Castle Grayskull.
Okay, I'm going to stop you right there. If you do that voice again, I'm going to kick you in the balls.
Thank you.
So
I only achieve that voice because you kicked me in the balls.
Because of the ball kicking. All right, so go ahead. You can do the lead-in. Tell us all about it. But
okay,
do it
so apparently it's the He-Man mythos, so... It takes place first on Eternia, which is the center of the universe, and that's where they channel the energy of the universe into Castle Grayskull, and whoever can do that is the master of the universe. So anyway, there's this battle going on Eternia between Skeletor.
The forces of Skeletor!
This beer meat seems extra floppy.
So there's a battle going on in Eternia, and there's some sort of wizard dude there who can open up portals to magic dimensions based on ketones. So.
Oh yeah, Orko. I mean, no, not Orko.
Gwildor.
Gwildor.
Skrotor here is, and there's a key, and in the firefight, they get out the best they can, and they end up on Earth.
Yeah, because the Gwildor just punched random buttons into that key device. Mm-hmm.
I thought it was a synthesizer. I mean, it's from Japan.
It's from Japan.
Right, right. So some Earthlings find the key, and they think it's a synthesizer, while He-Man and the gang try to recover it, while Skeletor's also searching for it, so he can kill He-Man and then become the master of the universe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. So we got to talk about everything.
Yeah.
This movie, I guess, as we brought up a minute ago, is about the most expensive cheap thing I've ever seen.
Yep.
We live in the metro area of Atlanta. They just had Dragon Con as we are recording. I've seen better costumes for people who are standing on the street outside of Dragon Con than some of this stuff. In particular, Frank Langella. Langella, whatever.
Is it Langella or Langella? I've heard Langella.
Langella.
Langella. Frank Langella's Skeletor is wearing a rubber mask that they just glued to his face so it makes the jaw move, but it's incredible. And, of course, we talked about Gwildor, who's the only one they put actual, I guess, money into, because Man-at-Arms looks terrible. And what's the woman's name?
Tila.
Tila. Come on, Tequila. Don't forget okay. Tila. That's my girl.
Tila, I mean...
Tila's got bigger balls than Gwildor in his face.
That's right. And I guess they must have redone the script or something, because she also has more lines than Dolph Lundgren does.
I prefer Sarah Michelle Gellar's Tila to this movie's Tila. Did you see that Kevin Smith revival of He-Man that was on Netflix for all six episodes?
No.
It was fine. I mean, and in the end, this should have stayed in a cartoon. But if you're going to bring it to action, live action, this is why you go to canon. The only other people who could do it... Oh, God, it just left me. Who's the guy who made the cheap Fantastic Four?
Roger Corman?
Corman would have done one hell of a He-Man movie. But
he would have filmed it in, like... Spain or Italy, and it would have been really weird.
And it would have taken.
It would have looked great, though.
It would have taken 4 weeks to do.
Yeah.
The special, and would have come $2 million under budget, which he would have pocketed.
And all the music would have been from Battle Beyond the Stars.
That's right. All right. So Charlie looks disapproving. What do you want to bring up, buddy?
Okay, you're right. You're right. Everything was sort of cheap, but they went grim dark on it, and I did not like that. It was not colorful. It was not fun. It was just basically let's. Try to do a gritty post-apocalyptic planet that looks like, you know, they're Mad Max rejects with, you know, cheap dollar store knockoffs of stormtroopers.
Yeah, oh yeah.
I mean...
This movie saw Star Wars, that's for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. I was not pleased with their re-envisioning of the...
How bad does your idea have to be where you look at the Flash Gordon movie from 1980 and decide... You know what? I want to do that. I just want to do it for $1.50.
I just got the feeling that wherever they were filming, they didn't have the permits to do it. So they were like, that's why half the scenes in the States are at night.
Like, quick, no one's on this street. Let's quickly, like, load in and do this scene.
I'm awake. It's 3 a.m. because I've been doing cocaine for 8 straight hours. Let's just film this road. Because we'll get to the music store and stuff. But there's a fight scene that takes place in a town that's abandoned. Like, there's not an extra to be seen anywhere in this movie. It's called trimming your budget. Excellent.
But, you know, that was the look of 1987. Let's think about some of the other movies that came out around that. You had Deathstalker 2.
Okay.
The Lost Boys.
Okay. Oh, I'll also throw out at you Back to the Future, because a good part of this takes place at an under-the-sea dance.
Well, that was 1985, though.
It was 2 years before that. This movie saw Back to the Future.
Batteries not included, so it has that look. It has that same look as all those films.
It also reminded me of Best Picture winner that year, The Last Emperor. I mean, just how gritty
how grim and dark
that's
it was.
That's what it was. That's what I was thinking of.
Oh, yeah. Frank Langella in The Last Emperor. Just yikes. Eating scenery and children.
Jesus Christ. Frank Langella is an Oscar nominee, and he was in this movie.
Yeah, but Frank Langella will do your movie.
Listen, you got to pay the bills, okay? Susan Sarandon is an Oscar winner. That's all. I'm just going to leave it right there, okay?
He won for Frost Nixon. Was he Nixon?
He didn't win, but he was nominated for Frost Nixon, and yes, he was Nixon.
Are you son of a bitch? If you have, I don't know how to describe this movie if you haven't seen it, because it's almost non-linear. The beginning part is a plot. You know, Skeletor is trying to take over, and he's used this key, like this magical, like circular key thing, to take over the various realms, to shoot around the universe, etc., etc., and his stormtrooper ripoffs are floating around. We're introduced to He-Man, She-Ra, and Man-at-Arms. Just fighting off random dudes out of nowhere.
Before we go on and get emails, did you just call her Sheila?
Isn't her name Sheila?
Tila.
Tila. Tila. Tila Tequila. Okay. But then they stumble upon the plot. They, like, practically trip over Gwildor, even though they weren't looking for him. And he turns out to be the most important person in the universe.
You gotta bring the MacGuffin in somehow.
It's true.
I mean, he could have been free. Anyway, whatever. And then we go to this hobbit hole. To escape the police, and he dials his, he's playing like, I don't know even how to describe it. It looks like a sex toy with buttons on the outside. And
all those like notes on it, Jesus.
It's like a circular keyboard.
Tell me more about it. Describe it. But this time say it slower.
It's about.
And deeper.
But ladies. But here's the problem I have with that scene, because they're all like, can you use this key to get us into Castle Grayskull? And he's like, well, with enough time, and then they show up. And he's like, well, why don't I use this secret passage which will put us into Castle Grayskull? And it's like, bury the lead, man.
Do or make it dramatic in any way.
Yeah, exactly.
Because it's just smash cut. We're here.
Yeah.
Yay! There's the dramatic tension in this fades away very quickly. It has nothing to do with our main characters. It just, the fact is, they might kill the humans, kind of. It's kind of it. There's also this woman in white that we have not really established at all.
The Sorceress of Grayskull?
The yes. Sorceress of Grayskull.
She's amazing.
She's beautiful. Is that not Evil-Lyn or Evil-Lyna?
No.
Okay.
The Sorceress of Grayskull has been captured by Skeletor. That's the whole reason why they show up at Castle Grayskull to begin with, is to save her.
Cylinder. Okay.
Okay, she's the one that's being held in the force field. He is taking her life from her, and that is why they have to enlist Gwildor to try to get back to save her.
And because this world is...
She keeps Skeletor in check.
That's right.
And with her out of the way, he can reign supreme.
And because the world is a scary place, she also plays Ross's mom, and therefore Courtney Cox's mom, in Friends for all 8 seasons. She comes back.
Nice.
Yeah,
nice.
She's okay. Judy Geller. There you go.
I'll tell you, if I could have had anybody else be the Sorceress of Grayskull, it should have been Angelica Houston.
Same energy.
That would have been... She would have had a really good energy, and she is sexy, and I would want to save her.
Already exists. That's her role in Captain EO.
I know. I think that's why I'm like, every time I see it, I'm like, man, missed opportunity.
Oh, I guess I should plug that since we're here. If you want, follow the Patreon or follow the Cineprob Facebook page if you want to hear our riff on this movie, which we did over a year ago. I guess last October,
I don't know.
Like that.
I just keep showing up.
Yeah, to bring vaguely beer meats. Thank you. Anyway, so from here, the whole point of this is...
Can you imagine?
The whole point of this is he's trying to free the sorceress as well, because she's getting her power drained from her or something. And when Gwildor makes their valiant escape, because they know that He-Man's going to come to rescue, they end up in some small Southern California town.
Yeah.
And so the middle 60% of this movie takes place in Southern California.
Convenient.
Convenient.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Those tiny, tiny Midwestern Southern California towns.
Yeah, it's very cheap to film. We should go to town in California. Anyway, so they...
Well, these days, you know, Southern California towns don't look like Southern California towns on film. You have to use Bulgaria. Yeah, I'm just going to let that die. That was a mistake.
Okay, so they appear in the parking lot of a fast food restaurant. This is where we're introduced to Courtney Cox wearing a cowboy hat. You know, wearing a gingham blouse, and they sell fried chicken, and it's terrible.
And ribs.
Fried chicken and ribs. You know, the classic pairing.
In fact, we made a fake commercial about ribs. Remember when we sat around and did that?
A YouTube version of a, like, it was like a, I don't know, it was like a 2 a.m. like infomercial about the perfect ribs.
The perfect ribs.
Apparently everyone on Attorney is a vegetarian because they're disgusted by the fact that food is made from animals on Earth.
And not everybody, because Man of Arms knew exactly what it was, and he was eating it fine. I think Tila was, the young millennial that she is accustomed to things like kale and frappuccinos.
and avocado on toast.
Definitely avocado toast. Treat yourself, you know? And that's when she's eating it, and she's horrified. Because, you know, Man of Arms, he's been in the service. He's been around. He's like, bitch, these are bones.
This isn't okay? The first human being I've eaten.
Yeah, right?
You're in a foxhole.
Yeah,
your body's been cooked alive by napalm.
You know those ribs?
Listen, they're delicious. It gets tough, man. You know? Just saying.
But she's not in the scene for 4 seconds before she takes her top off, which is a powerful move by Courtney Cox. But she ends up hooking up with her boyfriend because she's about to leave town forever. This is her final shift.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Her boyfriend is Kevin, by the way. So her name is Julie. Julie and Kevin.
Can you imagine dating someone named Kevin?
No. Gross. I'm going to vomit.
Julie and Kevin. That couple walks into any restaurant, they already want to speak to the manager.
Anyway, so they're in the back of his stoner van because she wants to say goodbye to her parents who are both dead, and he wants to go to a show because he's apparently playing at, like, a high school?
Their high school.
I got the impression it's a community center.
Kevin, I'm sorry. It's their high school.
It's implied that they are both high schools. This is their senior dance. This is, like, the end of their senior year.
Kevin, I'm sorry, but you're just too darn loud. And I just made Nick run away.
Nick's dead. He is dead.
No, yes. They confirm later that they are high school students. I mean, towards the end...
Well, you know they're high school students, because trust me, nobody... You know, you're not excited about someone coming to hear your set at a high school gym. Okay? As a performer, that's the set you don't tell anybody about.
Also, as a performer, even if it's your girlfriend or boyfriend...
Yeah.
They're only expected to go to one show.
Mm-hmm.
That's true.
After that one show...
Done.
If they show up... It's just icing on the cake. But
I agree with that.
Even a good friend, they should come to one show, and then they never have to see the improv group that will come on for 15 minutes at 2 in the morning at the bottom of a basement of a bar. They're a good enough friend.
They've also, this movie's so 80s that Living in a Box plays in the background.
Oh, my God, you're right. I heard that, and I'm like going, wow.
So anyways, while they go and visit her dead parents in the cemetery, that is where they find a pit, which they, you know, anyone else would think, hey, open grave, probably should stay away from that. But no, Kevin and Julie go to investigate only to find the universal key. And Kevin thinks, you know, obviously it's a synthesizer that someone left in a graveyard because...
That's where synthesizers are always washing up all the time, man.
That's where the stork picks them up from Japan and flies them over and drops them off in graveyards.
I hear Herbie Hancock wants to be buried with a synthesizer.
Mr. Mortician, did you find a synthesizer? Because I'm pretty sure I left it here. Oh, son, you're going to have to be more specific. There's ever so many synthesizers.
There's a lot of synthesizers around here.
Was it a keytar?
Exactly. So Kevin, of course, starts, you know, just pushing buttons because that makes sense. And while he does so, he accidentally sends a signal to evil Linda Track. And that is how Skeletor and his band of merry foes realize that they are here on Earth, and now they're going to come and wreak havoc.
I hear the chorus of Owner of a Lonely Heart, and I know where they are.
Very similar to that.
Yeah, you know, I have to say, I sort of enjoy your Skeletor a little bit more than Frank Langella's. But Frank played it a little too straight.
Yeah, I was about to say, there's definitely some passion behind Daniels.
Yeah, I mean, I've listened to like an hour and a half of that.
I mean, also, just imagine.
Hello, this is Skeletor. Motivating you for life, Skeletor Life Coach. Have you tried walking longer today?
I mean, it's just, first of all, they don't give him anything to do other than to yell at Evil Lynn and then two dead meats.
Mm-hmm.
And we can talk about these
dead
meats.
Is Beastman in this movie? Do I remember that correctly?
Yeah, he's the only one that came from the...
It's Beastman and Karg. They're both in this.
Okay.
Well, Karg was in the original cartoon?
Karg is in the late series of the cartoon, I think.
Okay.
Yeah. But yeah, in fact, we meet them when Kevin, you know, because you know what's worse than going to someone's show? Going to someone's sound check. So he takes Julie to the sound check at the gym. He's fucking around still with this thing. And he's like, hey, I'm going to go take this to my friend Charlie, different Charlie, who runs a music store. And that way he can appraise this because, you know, I found it. It's mine. I should sell it. So she's all like, leave me here. I want to bask in the glory that is our gym. And so he leaves her there. He leaves to go see Charlie. And that's when Karg and what's his name show up?
Well,
and
everyone.
No, Ludwig shows up later after the scene. But anyway,
also...
Yeah, they show up. Yeah. Shit happens in the gym.
And apparently, again, God knows, it was like A Night in Paris was the theme, so there's like an Eiffel Tower made out of Christmas lights, and it's...
Which is ironic, because that's the character that Kevin will eventually play.
Yeah, that's true.
I see what you did.
Yep.
Nerdy deep cut.
To my Voyager fans, Janeway or the Highway Bitch.
God help me.
What the hell's Voyager?
First of all, Voyager.
Okay, you are dead to me.
And
I take back all the nice things I just said.
I do love myself some Voyager, but I will say because it's new. I'm really liking Lower Decks. I've been enjoying it very much.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, that's some good
And again, maybe it's just that it's only streaming, but I don't hear people talking about it much, but I'm enjoying Lower Decks a lot.
Oh, yeah, people like it.
And Janeway was on it in a recent episode, of course.
Yeah.
Anyway. So here we are. They've burned down the gym. There will no longer be A Night in Paris. And this is
Depends on what year.
Paris 1941.
Oh, boy.
And then we enter the bread and butter of canon, which is a back alley.
Hitler enters the war. Hitler on the march.
He-Man is fighting for the Allies, but... It turns out that Evil Lynn has turned for Hitler.
I, Warbond, support He-Man.
There's a portrait of He-Man looking for, pointing towards Europe.
I gotta tell you, they got my dollar.
You have Wildor holding the sound thing. Like, Wildor is fighting Hitler one teleportation at a time. Anyway. And I mean,
even Tila's pulling her weight.
She's wearing like a mini skirt typing somewhere.
I really want to see this where like, you know,
this fan fiction exists somewhere.
It's set in like World War II.
I'm sure this exists.
Wait a minute.
Deep in the fan fiction realm.
Because this show's relatively new, I just have to ask, wait, are you saying He-Man fucks? The She-Hulk show. Do you remember that?
I haven't watched any of it.
Oh, god damn.
Yeah.
Nah,
I'm so busy. I have like 12 jobs.
And 6 podcasts to be on.
I know, and I don't listen to any of them.
Except for this one. Yeah. So you can hear...
I can hear myself moan.
You can hear your own sensuous voice.
I'm on a podcast.
So
this is her ASMR podcast right here.
So Julie, terrified. And she runs into the second most terrifying thing you can, which is Dolph Lundgren.
Oh, yeah.
Also, somehow, I think she has the shortest hair in the movie. Because her boyfriend's hair is longer, He-Man's hair is even longer. She's keeping it tight.
Evil Lynn, she's got that skull cap.
Dude, she's looking hot.
God damn, I would bang Evil Lynn so hard.
I think that was half our riff.
Yeah, it was.
You both, you and Larry.
It was me talking about banging Evil Lynn.
And you willing to kill Larry so that you can be the one banging people her. In. Yeah. So we have some mild fighting here, which is bizarre because Dolph Lundgren is in great shape and these people are just stunt doubles wearing suit. Again, I forget his name, but he looks like Sagat from like Street Fighter, but he has like two blades and he has like...
You know what his name is? Blade.
Oh, yes. Yes. Okay, yeah, him.
Man, I hope they didn't pull something coming up with that character.
I know. Yeah, it's Sorod, Blade, Beastman, and Karg. Those are the four they use.
Yeah, and it's like they made up like two new evil warriors. And
I know.
It's like, why couldn't you use the ones that were already existed?
Well, because I think the most popular one they could have used that they didn't was the set of twins that has the two heads.
Right.
And yeah. I think that they were worried that they didn't have the prosthetics components to do it.
Ah, fuck that. I want Triclops.
You know?
Or they could have
used... All they needed was a hat with eyes.
I know.
I mean, also, Skeletor could have done anything in this movie.
Yeah.
He kind of shows up on the dais at the end like he's Jabba the Hutt, but other than that... He just complains.
Listen, leaders delegate. Okay, Skeletor is a leader. He delegates.
I'm just saying, maybe even the same year this came out, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Shredder's doing shit, and you could have just had him.
But in the Shredder live action, he don't do shit till the end. So.
I will say, Skeletor did go to Earth.
Yeah.
Skeletor did capture He-Man. So
he sealed the deal.
I mean, I guess maybe my problem is just the whole fuck around in Southern California. Because if it just ended up staying in
Eternia,
then there's a movie. But here it's like so much of like, but will Kevin and Julie figure it out? I just don't care.
It's part of the love story.
Yeah, it is.
So anyways, after the fight, you know, the gym's burned down, so a cop shows up.
Right.
Because he's like, what the fuck? And then Kevin shows up at the same time. He's like, Julie, where's my girlfriend? Where's my synthesizer?
And this cop is a slacker.
Oh, no.
No, the cop is played by James Tolkien to deal with.
Is he related to any other Tolkiens I know?
No.
Okay.
Unfortunately, sure, spelled different.
He's not related to the South Park character. I can confirm that right now.
Oh, thank you.
He's been in two previous movies we've done, which is... No, actually, only one. War Games. He's in War Games. He's also in Top Gun. He's also in Back to the Future, which we'll probably do at a certain point soon.
Mm-hmm.
And all three of the Back to the Future movies.
Yeah.
But he's also... I mean, you know this guy. He's the bald principal that just yells a lot. And he's... plays the same character every time.
Yeah.
He just yells at people, which is what he's doing here. He's convinced that...
Oh, they're all communists.
They're all communists.
I think he calls them...
The
rusty,
Red Parade.
Yeah, he said Red Parade.
Yeah.
And he also called some pinkos at one point.
Yeah. All the keywords.
Yeah.
So.
Well, it also...
And he also thinks that the key is stolen. He thinks... You know, because Kevin's got this story of finding a synthesizer in a graveyard. Got to tell you, I kind of agree with him. I think Kevin's full of shit. So he takes the key from him, and now he has the cosmic key, and Kevin is sad and downtrodden and is, you know, still trying to find Julie, and Evil Lynn and them find Kevin, because they're like, where's this key, asshole? And he's like, yeah, cop took it.
And just because we're here, people start fucking around with the key. The reason Kevin thinks it sounds like a synthesizer is because there are these weird key tones you play. But the more you play, the portal starts to open.
Well,
so like,
universe is made of music, man.
How do you think they built the pyramids? I watched a whole special on it.
I mean,
God,
totally.
Obviously.
There was a time when the most popular show on the History Channel was Ancient Aliens, and we lived through that.
And it was, I know, and I'm ready for it to come back again. Why not? In fact, the truth is out there. Today is the anniversary of the very first episode of X-Files ever showing.
God help me.
Today?
Today? Why? It's Christmas Day.
Yeah.
That would be, what, the 30th anniversary?
Mm-hmm.
It's 92?
Mm-hmm.
92 or 93, something like that.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
And we were all wearing onions on our belt, as was the style at the time.
I know, I'm watching when you guys leave, that's for sure. But I mean, so James Tolkien's like acting like he's stone staring at glowing lights, and then the microwave explodes, and that's kind of the next movement of the movie, because like you said, Evil Lynn shows up, everyone's rubbing their nose from the cocaine, and we're just going from there. Like, Kevin,
listen, you gotta stay small to fit in those costumes. The way to do it is our friend, Cocaine.
Well, James Tolkien's the smallest of all of them. So He-Man shows up 10 minutes too late, and at this point, this is the most insane shootout I've ever seen, because it takes place in a music store, because they try to go back to where the dude who thinks it's from just a synth from Japan is, and it just blows up the fucking thing.
Evil Lynn ends up... Julie takes the synthesizer.
Right.
And Evil Lynn uses her powers, much like in Spaceballs, same year, to be like, Vespa, Vespa.
Oh, dude, and the voice
is through I, your parents.
It's I, your parents.
The one who we have established is dead for some reason. This is so sure, dude. Why would Leva Lynn be able to convince her? What if her dead mom was talking to her? Go on. So they go into this alleyway, and there's just...
Hello.
No script. It was bullet points, and that's why they had to make these insane leaps of logic to go from one plot point to the next.
You know what, though? And I don't say this often.
It works, though.
For that, you need the deftness of an actor like Arnold Schwarzenegger. Because when they were making Arnold movies in the 80s, it was just like, okay, we need this action scene, this action scene, this action scene. So in between, you just go...
And then tied together.
Right. But here, it's like there's almost too much script at times, and then there's not enough. It's just like, Mother, is it you? I thought you'd been dead for 5 years. And she goes to hug this stranger, and you're just like, and then she breaks out and goes, oh my god, you weren't my mother. But no, shit, your mom's dead.
And her mom told a plausible story about how they were spies, and they were like, they had to fake their death, and that this magical item and these aliens are like part of why she had to disappear.
Well, and of course Julie wants to believe this because Julie feels that she's responsible for her parents' death.
That's right.
Because she wanted to stay home and have sex with Kevin, and instead her parents were like, oh, okay, well, since you're busy studying...
Studying,
that's what I call it, too. They went off on a plane and they died. So she has a lot of internal guilt...
They flew to Catalina.
Yeah, I mean, who doesn't, right? When you're like, bored, nothing else to do.
Oh, my kid doesn't want to spend time with me. I think I'll just fly to Catalina for the weekend.
Just fly to Catalina.
And she goes down like
Peter. I mean, they have the best dressing. Just saying. So fucking good.
They go down like Peter Parker's parents. Just fucking crashing. But again, yes, she feels guilty for the death.
Yeah, so that is why she's so willing to believe this. And, so, you know, like I said, Evil Lynn recovers the key, and she summons Skeletor to Earth, saying, hey, I got it, come on down here, meet me. Skeletor shows up, and Julie is mortally wounded by Skeletor's lightning blast.
I will also say, at this point, James Tolkien is just running around with a shotgun, trying to shoot
him. Just shooting whatever.
Oh, that scene at the end where he's in Castle Grayskull with the shotgun is amazing.
Speaking of influence, that would have been great. It suddenly turns into, Sam Raimi's Masters of the Universe, because he's got his boomstick, and he's just in a place where there should never be a shotgun, because there's lasers. He's just, shooting randomly at these
people. And he's got, half of the car there that he's hiding behind. It's great. They're like... You know what? That's a good prop. Bring that whole fucking prop in here.
That's something else I just need to mention because we're here.
Yeah.
This movie needs to be washed out, and I don't know how the DVD transfer is on Sudsy's DVD, but watching this cleaned up on HBO Max is doing it no favors.
Oh, no.
This movie needs to exist on a TBS broadcast or on an old VHS tape. Because what Evil Lynn, for example, is wearing is like a leotard spray-painted silver with it's like a leather breastplate bikini top like you would see in any RPG, but it's clearly just plastic. And it just looks like plastic. It's not even skin tight to her. It's like it's just loose, kind of moving around because they had nothing. Man at Arms is wearing a football helmet that's been cut up. It's amazing. It's so much fun. You could put this on as a high school play and it would look better.
I mean, yeah.
Like that alien high school play they did a few years ago.
So, this is random, but I know this because my school has a partnership with Marvel. They get a lot of first-run shows just to see if it will work in a simplified version before they ramp it up a lot now. So even that Addams Family musical that's on Broadway now started out as a show that they put out to perform in the art schools because they're like, we want this to be able to look good small so that we can make it bigger. This would be perfect. You just imagine the marching band pushing this little dais in that Skeletor shows up on and then blasting something on a Barry Sachs before they pull him back out. Because there's two camera shots. It's almost filmed like a sitcom with a two-camera setup. It's amazing.
Well, when Skeletor blasts Julie and mortally wounds her, he simultaneously erases the memory storage of Gwildor's key, of the synthesizer, right?
Right.
Yeah, that was completely random.
Yeah,
but again,
it's very random. I was like, I don't see how these two are connected, but okay. And then He-Man has to surrender to save his comrades because he's that kind of guy, and that's when he goes back to...
But also his blast, yeah. It doesn't actually, like burn her or anything. It poisons her.
Yeah.
It's very strange.
It's very strange. It causes boils to appear, but not like burn boils, like poison boils.
Like monkeypox boils.
She's a plague victim. It's like, what happened? It's as though someone went to a spirit store and got the wrong makeup kit.
Yeah.
Right? Because what you'd expect is like burn marking and she's getting... No. This is like they got her the plague. She got monkeypox. And now she's slowly dying. It's an interesting choice, especially since the other half of the scene, people are flying around like green goblins, shooting green and pink lasers at people. So we have like...
Yeah, I gotta say, that part does not hold up well.
No.
Was believable until then.
Because like the rest of it is filmed like either Terminator, or I guess more recently like 1917. Like they're running through this burned out city, and there's people on hover pads shooting pink lasers at them. They've made some choices.
Choices were made.
Choices were made. But yeah, no, and this is... I almost wish, if it was 10 years later, they could have looked at a video game to see how this should have flowed.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no linear flow here. So they're fighting the guys on the hoverboards by climbing stairs inside a building so He-Man can jump on one of the green goblin floaters and fly it around. And I know Amazing Spider-Man existed as a graphic or as a comic by this point, but the way this thing moves really looks like the 2002 movie. Like, it's very funny how it kind of floats, other than the fact that the composite shots are terrible.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, the background all of a sudden turns into a still image as they're like, pew, 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 pew.
Well, I mean, that was the thing. I mean, on the HBO Max version, you could definitely see all the painted and hand-illustrated backgrounds.
Oh
my God.
So it's funny. I've not seen this on HBO Max. The last time I saw it was you and I watched it together. Yeah. So, okay.
Well, I mean, but and it's
the
funny.
The DVD looks great precisely because you can't tell those things.
Yeah.
Well, and I mean, it's not even... Sometimes it's painted. Sometimes it's like they put a picture project it on top of a photograph.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's no texture even. But at this point, we have the giant flowing dais with the guns that really does look... I made a Jabba the Hutt joke, but it looks like the scene from Return of the Jedi when they're going out into the sand desert, right? It's got the floaty things out front and behind. It's smaller, but that's literally the model they had. And if you told me they just superimposed a toy... on top with people on top of it, I'd have believed you. And so we have kind of a game of chicken between Dolph Lundgren, the other laser shooter, and eventually the dais.
That's it.
But sadly, obviously it ends up being that He-Man has to give in because he's scared they're going to kill all his friends. So they return back to Eternia, where Skeletor attempts to torture He-Man into submission. To make
and
his victory.
This is when it gets really gay.
This is when it gets so gay.
Oh, is this the whipping scene?
The whipping scene.
The whipping scene. I was like, oh, hi, hello.
Yes.
Well, and I mean, again,
Charlie, why are your pants off right now? Put them back on.
I will say, what's funny is, every time a scene like this comes up in a superhero movie, it's the trailer. Because they did this in the most recent Thor movie, right? Where Thor, where Zeus zaps away his clothing.
Let's chain the hero and then, rip their clothes off and...
Yes.
Oh, I mean, nothing like a fetishized sword and sandal. I love it.
Sweats over here.
But yeah, and so we have this kind of weird race against time because they're still trying to get...
Oh yeah, well, so back on Earth, everyone else is trying to get to Eternia. And guess what? The answer was within,
Kevin.
Tom Harris all along? All he had to do was play his music? And that's what he's been trying to do?
I would do anything for love.
Well, it's because, it's... Tom Harris that only works because... Skeletor cleared out the memory of the cosmic
key.
Exactly.
And he's a master songwriter.
Exactly. Because otherwise, had he not cleared it out, it would have just taken them to, like, you know, Saturn, which we all know Saturn sucks. No one wants to go there,
I mean,
right?
Come on. Like, it's so done.
I mean, one,
exactly.
One star. Would not recommend, right?
Well, and then Julie is succumbing to what I can only imagine is cold. Because they treat her by putting blankets on her.
Yeah. Well, Gwildor has a cannon move. That's how you treat illnesses.
I mean, it's like at the end of any action movie where they give you, like, the space blanket. You're just like,
she'll be fine. She's got the space blanket.
That's the advice I give the Hollywood Upstairs Medical College.
And
that's right.
And then, meanwhile, Gwildor has gone full E.T. and there's, like, little speakers coming out in a little satellite dish. And they're like, wait, you're a bard. You can play this.
You're a master musician.
Exactly.
Master songwriter.
So Kevin recreates the tones necessary to create a gateway to Eternia. And it takes the whole group, including Lubin, the cop.
Oh, and
half the
half
car.
Half the car.
And half the city and a brick wall.
But I'm telling
like
you,
a little mini diorama.
And it doesn't put them just anywhere on Eternia, which I would imagine is a big place like Earth. It puts them right in the fucking throne room, which is super convenient. I mean, I can't even get my Uber to drop me off there. I'm just saying.
Well, but, like, then we enter what I imagine was the He-Man stunt show at Universal Studios.
Oh.
Because there's half a car, you have a vaguely lubed up Dolph Lundgren with, like, oh, I have battle damage, and oh my goodness, a shotgun! And there's flashing lights. And also, at this point, we get, like, Mecha Grayskull? Because Skeletor has like a bigger hat. So he's
He has claimed the power of the master of the universe, and now he's like more powerful. And this is where he gets close, but not perfect, to what I would have loved to have seen in a Skeletor, which is totally leaning into the camp and just being ridiculous.
I agree. I mean,
yes, he chewed the scenery, but he did not chew it the right way.
Well,
girl.
But I agree with you. I almost wish this had less budget, so you needed more of that cheese from the actors. You know what I mean?
Let me put it to you this way: if they could have done this with like Jeremy Irons,
that is some scenery chewing.
Oh my gosh, yeah. That would have been fucking epic right there.
I mean,
Jeremy Irons and Angelica Houston.
Oh my god,
Jeremy my nipples are hard from this fantasy.
Right?
Jeremy Irons is Skeletor. I'm sold.
Done. Right?
Done.
That would have been brilliant.
Done. I would be here for that. So. Oh my god. So I love when Skeletor accidentally frees He-Man after all of this.
Yeah.
Just for a second. So is that Joan Jett then as Evil Lynn?
Ooh. I mean, it is 87.
No. You understand. Meg Foster as, like, freaking Evil Lynn was perfect. Perfect.
Yeah,
she was, like, brilliant in all these schlocky horror science fiction movies of the 80s.
Yeah.
I love when he's holding her hand. She's like...
Yes.
Just like putty in his hands. That's sexy.
Yeah, no.
She kills it.
She was perfect.
She can stay.
She's perfect
in
that
role. She can hang out with the crown.
Absolutely.
Definitely.
And I can even deal with Dolph Lundgren staying in as He-Man.
Yeah, I
believe
that.
I think that if everyone else was super campy and he was playing the straight man, that would have been epic right there.
Yeah, I mean, and the only place you could put another act, like an actual quote unquote actor, would be Man at Arms because he's nobody.
Yeah.
But like it's the 80s, so you know it's gonna be like a Jesse Ventura type.
Yeah.
Because you just need like someone who's not an A-lister.
Yeah.
Right. And I mean you would get rid of Dolph in any other role, but it's Dolph Lundgren here, and you gotta love it.
Yeah.
Anyway, so we finally have our fight scene.
Yeah. After accidentally freeing He-Man, he reclaims the Sword of Grayskull, which, you know...
I have the power!
Of which everyone waited the whole time for that.
I appreciate the fan service.
I did. I agree with that.
And I have to say, this was the first time that they... Like, they saved up their entire choreography fight scene budget for this final scene, because the rest of the movie, when he's swinging his sword, they just close in on his face as he's swinging the sword, and you're supposed to imagine him, like, slicing and dicing everyone.
Yeah.
What I also like here, too, is it's, like, postmodern Michigas crammed together, because you do have a part of, like, a brick wall and a car that they're shooting from. You have the temple looks like a temple from like a bad Bond movie or an Indiana Jones movie. Kevin is dressed like, he's actually dressed very much like a Harrison Ford character with a leather jacket that's kind of worn in with a t-shirt. And you have James Tolkien with a shotgun and everyone is hiding behind an old Chevy.
Yes.
And like, and then meanwhile, something we don't usually get in Star Wars is a dude just punching people. Because He-Man is fighting these dudes who look more Spaceballs than Star Wars, but they're still wearing like Darth Vader helmets. And he's just, there's laser blasts everywhere and he's just giving people left hooks and throwing them off a cliff. Like, because there's like a stairway over nothing, like a good Star Wars movie would.
Exactly.
But it's just, and then his sheer, like, Herculean strength shoves over a statue. None of it matches up, which is what makes it incredible.
It's true.
Absolutely. I mean, this the final battle sort of, like, redeems most of the rest of the movie. I have to say, it was my favorite part of the whole movie.
And then it gives a sequel setup, which is that Evil Lyn and the other people get away.
Yeah.
So they could have had another movie if they wanted, which is kind of, I want there to be a sequel now. Old Dolph Lundgren and
just, oh my gosh. Oh man, and that would be something. It on
to the, it's like Creed. He's passing it on to the next generation.
Well, no, see, it would be the opposite. It would be, because Lubick decides to remain on Eternia, the opening scene for the next movie would be them all being on Earth, living their lives, and Lubick, you know, you hear the crackling, like, and the Lubick shows up with his shotgun, he's like, follow him, you know, we need you. And
hey, then, like, you hey Pinkos, follow me!
And it goes full on Mad Max, and he's got, like, a torn-off sleeve, and he's just holding the shotgun.
I'd be like, oh, damn, I can't wait to watch. And that's how the movie should have ended. You've been like, whoa.
The year is 2025.
People are eating Thai pots. It is ridiculous.
So who's eating all the scenery now? If we did that.
Oh, like what would be the best cast today?
Yeah. Could we do it?
First of all, I want The Rock as not He-Man but Skeletor.
Well, at least then we have a threatening Skeletor.
Yeah, no, that would be a good one. That would be a good one. So you need someone who can lean into the camp that Skeletor naturally is. He's a bungling idiot, but he's just fucking evil in the same
way. Is it wrong that I want Nathan Lane to be my Skeletor?
No, it's not.
Well, because that's the scenery being chewed.
Yes.
Yeah.
And also, I love The Rock, but I get a little bit more Jason Momoa kind of vibes from He-Man.
Oh, there you go.
Well, because I want He-Man to relate to another human being, and Dolph Lundgren doesn't relate to anyone. He doesn't. I mean, it's not going to be Vin Diesel. It's not like he can talk to a human being. He's just have family.
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 I'm seeing Gal Gadot as Teela.
Okay.
All right. I can take that.
But who would be your sorceress? And it can you can't cheap out and use
Angelica Houston.
No.
Helen Mirren.
But see, the sorceress is supposed to be young. As she's had her power strain, she ages.
It starts out as Jennifer Lawrence, and by the end, it's Helen Mirren.
Meh. Okay.
I'll tell you someone who she would be Teela good. Natalie Portman got ripped for that new Thor movie.
Ooh. Oh, there you go.
I mean, it's just
sexy. I like a lady with muscles.
I gotta tell you, if you're gonna do that, I'd rather Natalie Portman be Evil Lyn.
Oh, there you go.
Come back as Evil Lyn.
Oh, actually, that would be fun.
Yeah.
Because she can play a very scary evil character, as we found out in that Swan movie.
Oh, yeah.
She was creepy as shit. Yeah, so that would she could play it totally creeptastic.
And actually, it would be just funsies if Chris Hemsworth was He-Man and a lesser Hemsworth was Skeletor. You're not so different, you and I, He-Man.
Lesser Hemsworth. That's so
a lesser Hemsworth.
Don't
love
ever
it.
Refer to me as a lesser Hemsworth.
It's the Liam's up there, and he's like, "It's fancy to meet you. You skipped out on Thanksgiving, hey man." It just.
Oh my god.
Oh my god. And then Doug Jones is Gwildor.
But if they had to do it today, they would have to like no Gwildor, no fucking Gwildor. They'd have to be all in with Orko.
Ooh.
Benedict Cumberbatch just floating around going, woo!
No, they would just do like they do now and just use like Vin Diesel or like, you know, Bradley Cooper.
Oh, but no, but you're right. They would be 100%.
Alan Tudyk.
Alan Tudyk. Yeah, he does all the voices these days.
And it would, And it would be 100% CGI. It would just be Alan Tudyk clucking like a chicken.
I see a CGI character and then John Mulaney voicing Orko.
Yeah.
Of course it would be Mulaney, right?
Of course.
Actually, today it would be Pete Davidson, but if it were tomorrow, it would be John Mulaney, because he only matters for 24 hours, then he fades to dust.
Or what's the guy who does everything on Big Mouth?
Nick Kroll?
Not Seth Rogen.
Nick Kroll, there you
yeah.
go.
Yeah. If you haven't seen Oh Hello on Netflix, you've got to watch it. It's
Oh
really
Hello?
Fun. It was a Broadway show with Nick Kroll and John Mulaney.
Okay.
And they play, one plays an old Jewish stereotype. Anyway, they're those New Yorkers who have rent-controlled apartments, and they've been on Broadway forever, and they're telling about their shows on Broadway.
Oh, lovely.
And it's very funny. It's
all
very
right.
good.
So, anyway. So we're all forgetting how the movie actually ended. Which is when they send them back to Earth, Julie awakes, and it's the morning of her parents' death by plane crash.
It's the Jumanji ending.
Yes, they send them back early enough so that way she could prevent them from the ill-fated flight by taking their keys. She runs outside to Kevin to be like, is this real? And he's like, yeah, bitch.
Is this the real life? Is this just fantasy?
And then in the background we hear... All around me are familiar faces.
Oh my god.
I made a Queen joke.
I made a Donnie Darko joke. I don't know who made the worst joke.
And they're like, she's like, yeah, you know, and Kevin confirms that it's real by producing this little sphere.
Mm-hmm. And
the special magic. It's
essentially,
it's, you know, like, you can always, you know, should you need us, you know.
Hey, since it didn't happen, do you guys want to go study?
Exactly. Oh, my God. And then, of course, that blue sphere contains He-Man in front of the castle, raising the sword above his head. And that's amazing. And then in a post-credit scene, did y'all watch the post-credit scene?
I did.
Skeletor's head emerges from the water at the bottom of the pit, and he says... I'll be back. You're supposed to say
I'll
that.
I'll be back.
No, you gotta say it like Skeletor. You've been Skeletor the whole time.
I'll be back.
Very good. Yay, just like that.
I will say, when we did the riff, if I recall correctly, we were bullshitting so much in the credits that it surprised us.
We didn't. We never knew there was a post-credit scene, so when it started, we were like, what? Stop! And we were like, whoa, hold the fucking show. What are we at? What's happening?
I'm
pretty sure that's how Michael Jackson announced his farewell tour. He just... came up from water, you know, the dark slits where his nose used to be. I'll be back.
Well, and they did a freeze frame like it was Thriller too, and like, and he comes out of like it's a pink scene, and he comes out of like what I guess is surge because he's dripping green, and he just goes, I'll be back. And then it freezes on him, and we cut to black, and that's He-Man. Or no, excuse me, it's Masters of the Universe. He-Man's not in the title.
That's right.
Whatever. We're done.
For a reason.
We're done.
Candace, would you recommend this movie?
Absolutely. Yeah, I love it. I love this movie. Are you kidding? As soon as I saw that you were going to do this movie, I was like, I'm coming to your fucking house. I don't even care if I've been invited or not.
Three former members were eliminated, so she could be on this podcast.
It's true.
Just cut up. Sudsy.
Well, I have to tell you.
You know what? This is a remarkably stupid movie, but it was a whole hell of a lot of fun. I'd rather watch this than watch any other generic, serious 80s fantasy movie.
You know, I may have been trashing like Frank Langella, but I did enjoy his scenery chewing.
Mm-hmm.
I did enjoy Dolph Lundgren trying to like be the serious voice in this episode, in this movie. I just wish they had leaned more into the camp. But otherwise, yeah, watch it. You'll be disappointed if you're a hardcore He-Man fan.
Oh, see, I think the opposite. I mean, I consider myself, like, pretty attuned to the He-Man lore. And I grew up watching He-Man because I'm older than everyone else on the podcast. But that
She's
being
29.
Exactly. But that being said, I think I loved it because it you could tell it was made by someone who actually really loved the show. And they wanted to make a really serious version because it was so important and endearing to them, which is, by the way, the worst thing you can ever do if something is really important to you.
But it's
never win with drama. Never win, go comedy.
Yeah, no,
always go comedy.
It's not. That's the whole point. It's not serious. The show is never serious.
I know.
You're gonna have a hard time getting from me that you shouldn't watch a canon movie. Although I will say Charlie is right. Like. Even Death Wish 3 is sillier than this. Right?
Oh, boy.
Because it goes over the top. He's like, hey, Pally, this gun is too small. Do you have a bigger gun? Like, and so, like, this should have been sillier. I don't know how you make it sillier, but it could have been sillier.
They wanted the silliness to be in completely carried by Gwildor, by Billy Barty. And that's where they went wrong. It was, this is our comic relief. And they made him look funny. They gave him funny lines. But one character cannot carry the entire comedic performance of a movie like that. That doesn't work like that.
And I will say, too, it felt like there was a second script with this rom-com nonsense between Julie and Kevin.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's also light and funny, kind of, but it's a completely different movie than Gwildor being a bumbling inventor.
Yes.
Right? Like, and so, like, all these things don't fully line up, but I can't say you shouldn't see it. This falls into the camp of Jean-Claude Van Damme's Hard Target movie, where Wilford Brimley is playing a Cajun, and they're hunting humans for sport, and he punches a snake to death. Like, it's so stupid that you're kind of like, well, yeah, why would I not watch this again right now? We're going to have pizza after this and watch a movie, aren't we? I mean, right? Anyway, so, yeah, I'm going to recommend this movie. I think it's fucking a lot of fun, and we should do more nonsense like this. As we've been doing this season, and we will continue doing throughout this entire season, I'm going to tell you what's coming out next week. So for October, we were going to do an entire month on werewolf movies.
Mm.
The first of which is going to be Silver Bullet, starring Gary Busey. And so you're asking me, it's September, why are we talking about October? Well, because right in the middle, they decided to release a DC movie called Black Adam. So we're going to slot, in the middle of October, Green Lantern with Ryan Reynolds.
Oh boy,
that's bad.
So next week, enjoy Gary Busey being Gary Busey in a werewolf movie. That we can then later do a Green Lantern movie.
Okay.
Thank you for listening. Thank you for subscribing. Thank you for all you do. I appreciate you guys. Leave us a review wherever you get it. And please keep on sharing. Bye, guys.
Bye.
Season 9 of Myopia Movies is produced by Nick Hoffman and Daniel Suttis. It is hosted by Nick Hoffman and stars Daniel Suttis and Matt Quinn. The theme music is Surf Shimmy by Kevin MacLeod of Incomtech.com and is licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0 license. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and review us wherever podcasts are found. Thanks, guys.